The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
And welcome, episode 295 of Armcast Dead 60 Podcast. I am your host, Armand Rosamilia, and got a really good interview. Michael Agliolo. I have to say it slow, even though it's Italian, you're supposed to say it really fast. Michael Agliolo. Really cool interview. I enjoy when I get somebody in that I'm not very knowledgeable about or like buddy-buddy with. So there's two trains of thought here when doing interviews after all this time. Is you get somebody that you've known like a long time or somebody that you're really comfortable with, like a John Bowden or a Chad Lutsky or Chuck Buddha or Jay Wilburn, somebody like that that I've had on the podcast many times, I've hung out with in person, I've done signings with, all of that. And you just kind of BSing for half an hour or so. And then I get brand new people that I have not had on my radar yet, like the aforementioned Michael Agliolo. And so it's pretty cool to get to know those people. So that's kind of what this interview is, but I think we had a nice conversation, and you probably just listen to it, and you'll probably know that I really don't have to really just keep talking about it. What I do want to talk about before we jump into it is AdamandEve.com. You can check them out. They are our sponsor this week. And you can get almost any one item for 50% off. And then they pile on the good stuff. 10 free gifts, which is awesome. So you get a free gift for you, free gift for her, free gift for the both of you. You get 6 sizzling videos, free shipping. Just pretty cool stuff. So check them out, AdamandEve.com. And use ARMCAST to check out, ARMCAST. And you will get all of that. All right. Let's get into some interview. And welcome back to Armcast Dead Sexy Podcast. So my next guest, very interesting. I got a lot of questions already in my head just from the intro I'm going to read here. With a master's degree in photography and a 30-year career producing images for most of the Fortune 500 companies, his vision has evolved from revealing the outside world of images to revealing the inside domain of his imagination. Words have now taken the place of his camera lens, allowing you to experience the impact of his writing internally as if they were a series of photographs. Michael Agliolo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
So, are you not doing photography anymore?
You know, I'm not. I use my my iPhone. It's the closest thing I get to taking a photo nowadays.
isn't that what everybody does, though? I mean, it's
yeah, you just... If you're making money, though, you need the big camera system. And I was into that for a long time, but I've really stepped away completely.
Hmm. Was it burnout? Was it the fiction was more of a pull for you?
The answer is yes, but the truth is I love being a photographer, professional photographer. I wasn't dealing with weddings, portraits, and stuff like that. I was dealing with corporations and traveling a lot, and it was a gas. And then I stopped working with clients and became a stock photographer, which allowed me to shoot anything I wanted and then sell it to my agents, who would then sell it to the world. And again, that was great. I got into Photoshop, pretty deep and pretty early. And so I don't want to call it burnout. I just found something that was freer. This allowed me to go anywhere. Writing allows you to, there's no gravity involved. It's simply my mind and whatever I feel like coming up with. Mm-hmm. So I loved that freedom even more than the freedom I had with the camera.
So had you always been a writer?
Absolutely not. I probably became a writer, I would say, 6 years ago, completely by accident. The longest thing I'd written before that was probably a 5-page term paper in college. I'll give you a quick intro how it happened. I've been married 35 years. I'm upstairs with my wife. She's on her iPad. I'm working on mine, and I look over and I'm not sure why I said this, but I just said, "Hey, I think I'll write a book." And she laughed at me and said she went into Schwarzenegger's voice in Terminator and said, "Do it." And right then and there, I took out the laptop and started typing and wrote a couple paragraphs that the next morning when I got up, I said, "Oh, well, I want to see what happens next." And about 90,000 words later, I had my first book called Last Light. And it just kind of flowed out of me in such an easy pattern that I was hooked. It was the fact that I didn't know the next sentence, no less the end of the book. And when I was done, it was a book. And I self-published it, put it out there, and next thing I knew, I was in my next book, which is probably the one we're going to talk about, called The 51st Directive. So it was totally an accident, and I've fallen completely, absolutely in love to where I don't touch the camera anymore. This is what I want to do.
Wow. So, my name, the kernel of an idea, something had to be there before that moment, no?
No. I honestly, I probably got a C in English, and that was probably the teacher liked me or something. I can't really, I wish I could put my foot on it and come up with an answer for it, because I get asked that a lot, and I'd love to have a cute answer, but the truth is it was so much freedom to allow the imagination, just like you do in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. You get to go anywhere you want in Photoshop. And all of a sudden, I had more freedom to let my mind just have a blast, just turn it loose. Yeah. And story ideas, just the next sentence just kept showing up. And I don't think that's the way a professional writer would have learned to write, but it's what it was the only way I knew how. And so I just kept getting up each morning and going, "God, I want to see what happens next."
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the fun of it, though. I mean, that's the fun of being an author. There's no one way to do it, and it's I mean, it's cliche, but it's the truth. It's write a book because that's the book you want to read.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm finding out in all the books that I'm coming up with, I'm on my third one now. I keep finding myself going into the exact same kind of movies that I like, as well as books, which is the world's at stake, and there's a little love story in the middle of it. And that just keeps coming back to, I'll call it a style. I'm not necessarily, I'd like to be a writer that was, like, some writers are so good at coming up with their characters, and you can read a story that's just about a family, and it's interesting. But that's not necessarily what I want to read. I kind of want to be sitting on the edge of my chair holding on when I'm reading something and can't wait to see what happens next. So that's what I find myself doing.
Right. Now, were you a big reader growing up?
Yeah. I've always liked fiction.
Because even the crazy way that you jumped in, there still has to be that base of, you know, that you actually enjoy reading, which goes hand in hand with the writing as well.
Yeah, and you know, my first book, my main character is a photographer, which was a natural I knew the expertise behind it so that I didn't have to do the research necessarily on how to be a professional photographer. And hey, nothing like making a photographer have to save the world. No one's done that. And I pulled it off and had a beautiful woman beside me the whole time.
Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things that I find from talking to so many authors over the years is just being creative. And there's other outlets, you know, where the photography is a very creative thing for you. Writing is very creative. I've had people who play guitar, people who paint, people who sculpt, people who do other things as well. So it's always fun when you have that second outlet, or you have an outlet like yourself where you did it for a long time and you were really passionate about it and you've moved that creative energy into the writing now.
You know, for a while, I've also taught photography and Photoshop at the local university, couple part-time classes. And I always told the students, creativity is not something that you've got inside of you and it's just going to pop out. So I used to teach that you have to practice creativity. I'm going to give you a little really silly example. I literally practice creativity every day in some small way. The example I like to give is just about a week or two ago, I was in my closet. I played basketball the night before, and at my age, the next morning it's Advil time, and I dropped something on the floor. I dropped some change on the floor, and I did not want to bend over and pick it up. And so I said, okay, I'm going to figure out how to pick up that quarter creatively without moving, without bending over. So I'm in my closet. I look over, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it. I've got a pair of tennis shoes next to me. I could reach a coat hanger. I took the coat hanger off a little roll, unbent the hanger, and used the curled end to pick up the shoe by the shoelace, brought it over to the quarter, turned it sideways, kicked the quarter into the shoe, and then using the shoelace again, I picked up the shoe with the hanger and brought it up to my hands and didn't have to bend over. And I consider that a little bit of trying to be creative no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Because
when you want the big creative, you better have kind of worked out some of the little stuff first. So I kind of say it's about practicing it too.
Yeah. So now for you, the you know, you sit down, you write that first book, you put it out, you start working it. At what point do you jump into that second book, and is it a different experience and process for you now that you had one finished under your belt? Because not a lot of people ever finish that first or the third or the fifth or that eighth book where they start.
Well, I had that same, I didn't know if I was going to run into that cliche writer's block. All I knew is that I wanted to do another story. At first, I thought of probably like a lot of people do, of doing a sequel, because you're living with these characters for a year or two, mm-hmm. and you don't want to leave them. You're kind of like they've become friends. But on this particular case, I had no idea what I was going to do next, so I just started to. I wrote probably two other stories that I got about halfway through and couldn't figure out the ending and abandoning them, and then this 51st Directive hit me. And I did a little research and found out that 51st Directive is a real government directive, and started to get fascinated with the fact that today's political world is in such turmoil, and this directive could cause so much turmoil. It just sounded like a natural story. Mm-hmm. And started climbing in that way and found out that the next sentence kept showing up until I got to the end. It's kind of how I kind of figure out that's the kind of writer I'm going to be.
Right.
And
now I'm guessing you had to do a lot more research for the second book.
Almost all of it. Government. I also wanted to challenge myself, so instead of writing in third person like I did the first book, this one I wrote in first person, and as a 31-year-old female FBI agent, which was really a stretch. And that was a flaw. It was like having to think a little bit like a woman. And I grew up with two older sisters and a mom. So maybe I had a little jump start there. But I started to ask questions to women and did a lot of research that way, just asking little things that they do that guys wouldn't necessarily figure out, and I threw those in the book, asked how they felt about guys checking them out, because that happens a lot, especially with a 31-year-old FBI agent, who was part of her problem that she thought was the fact that she was attractive and guys weren't taking her serious enough. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot of fun to do and a challenge.
Yeah. So give me the elevator pitch for the book.
You know, I probably read the doggone back of my book. Can I do that?
Yeah, that's what I do too.
Okay. Discover the power of the 51st Directive through the eyes of FBI agent Erica Brewer, as she and Washington, D.C. detective Sam Marco uncover a secret government conspiracy that turns the United States Constitution into dry ink on parchment. A handwritten letter sent to the FBI by a murder victim unleashes a trail of deceit, putting the United States armed forces in direct conflict with each other. The deepest parts of the Internet hold the secrets to a world that will never be the same. As Homeland Security, Presidential Directive 51 overrides every freedom you believe you had when you woke up this morning. The 51st Directive will scare you, should scare you, and no one knows it exists. It does.
Now who wrote elevator. That? Who wrote that back copy? You?
Yeah. I'm the guy that has to write everything at this point.
Right. Well, because it's good. It's you hit you hit all points. You introduce the character, the plot. You ramp it up a little. I like that. It's something obviously makes you go, okay, I want to read this book. If you pick it up in a bookstore, if you're on Amazon looking at it.
That's what I'm hoping. I actually see the book, by the way, is I'd like it to be informative, but the truth of the matter is I'm hoping that this is a book you took on vacation and sat down at the beach with a mm-hmm. with a Corona and spent the afternoon reading and you went, you know what, I'm going to finish this, and you read through the day, because hopefully it's like a story you don't want to leave in the middle of a movie.
Right. Well, it sounds very action adventure oriented, like the old where the Executioner books from back in the day. It's like that Pulp Fiction fun roller coaster ride type of story.
Yeah, with some spices of truth.
Mm-hmm. which is the scariest part of it.
Yeah. If anybody out there hasn't heard of the 51st Directive, you ought to Google it. You'll find out. It's one of the things I tell folks when they're reading my book. Make sure you read that first page where it says, this is a fact. Because yeah. It truly is a directive that I have never met anyone that knows what it means. No one knows it even exists.
So how did it come on your radar?
I was looking around for ideas. And I think this came about after 9/11. And I could see where it was necessary that it was written. It's basically if the government faces an extreme crisis and it no longer can function like it usually has, the president gets the ability to completely take over all three branches of the federal government. And also, because it's in a catastrophe, the president is the one that decides when the catastrophe has been solved or the crisis has been solved. And so the person who sets it in motion is the one that ends it. And it's not a constitutional amendment. It's a directive. Right. But it's as solid as a constitutional note. And we would all be subject to a president that decided that it was necessary to declare this. And so it was just one, I must have just caught that word 51st Directive and then jumped in and Googled it, started to do the research and found out how it came about and said, boy, that sounds like a scary story. And that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's what, you know, they say that the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah. And I hope some people actually look it up and check it out.
Yeah.
Not only the book, but actually the directive too.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary. It's interesting, but it's very scary. So what's the next book? Is it a completely different world again, or?
Yeah, totally different. Again, I decided I liked first person, but this time I went back to a male protagonist, and this one's called The Empath. And basically, an empath is someone who feels other people's pain. And I decided that I wanted to get into the little bit of the a little science fiction. So I've had this empath not only feels other people's pain, he starts the cure, speeds up the person's ability to heal, and this person that has this ability doesn't know how it happens or why it happens, but he's able to do this. And I just found a story in that started off small and just what was happening to him in his life, and then me being me took it to where I had to make the world at stake again, and found out that that was the easy thing to do, and I went to action. This book goes from a small town in Northern California to Washington, D.C., to North Korea, to some technology in submarines, nuclear submarines that have to basically stop some catastrophe from happening. And my guy's right in the middle of it the whole time, and we see everything through his eyes. And I'm pretty much done with this book. It's in the editing stage, which for me is my favorite part, because the writing is the hard part, and the editing is where I get to do the Photoshop to the photo.
that's a good analogy for you. So for you, was it a big learning curve with as far as the promoting and the marketing and all that stuff?
Yeah, that's the whole other side, and I tried it myself on my first book, did a couple things, and getting a agent or a publisher, as probably everybody out there knows that's tried, is, I don't even know what the analogy would be. Let's take a ride to the moon. It's hard to find anybody that will get past. I don't even know if you get anybody to read just about anything in your query letter that you send out. I had, the first time I tried, the very first agent I tried to get literally called me back and was interested, and I went, oh, this is going to be easy. I mean, the very first one.
Yeah.
Well, I've got probably 200 or 300 form letters back, emails saying, you know, thanks, but this is not our kind of book, and I understand now. This is a whole other world that you have to kind of claw your way into. What I'm doing now is I've hired a gentleman named Christopher, and I'm just going, let's get me into the promotion on the internet. Let's see what avenue that'll take. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll pick up a couple thousand sales, and when I write to a potential agent or publisher and saying, look, I've got 5,000 sales on my book. Are you interested? I have a feeling they're going to read a couple more pages of what you've come up with. So well, that's the avenue I'm on now.
Yeah. Well, you got to set yourself apart, because they probably have, you know, 50 books a day in that slush pile of brand new authors or authors who don't understand the marketing, the promotion, that's such a huge part, and don't have followers and don't have the sales. Because it's real easy for anyone to go on Amazon. If you say, hey, I just self-published this book, and they look and they immediately look at your rank, and they can figure out roughly how many books that's selling right now. It's really easy for them to go, well, this book is dead in the water. Let's move on to somebody else. You got to have that complete package. So it's good that you're looking at that and you're figuring out it's not just, unfortunately, it's not just about writing a great book. It's about the rest of it too.
And it is really as necessary, and you've got to put as much energy into that side. I don't want to. I'm probably like a lot of folks. I really don't want to. I want to just write my next book.
Yeah.
But that's great if you want to, you know, hand your kids your book when you say, look what I wrote. But if you want to be published, you're going to have to spend some money. You're going to have to spend some time and learn that game. It's just like photography. Clients didn't call me up. I had to go find them and work hard and show them that I had something that they were willing to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the stock photography world. I had to get agents that were interested in my work. And like you said, they're getting 50 a day. And that's those 50 books a day that they, you know, these query letters that they're getting, there was 50 yesterday too, and 50 the day before that. And I understand. You better write one heck of a first sentence.
Yeah.
And even then, they don't know who you are. I understand. So I'm ready to play the way you, you know, this new wave, and possibly get create my own buzz.
Now, can you use any of that, any of the experience, the photography experience, like you mentioned, working with agents and different things? Were you able to use any of that to translate into, you know, into the book world?
Only tenacity, I would say. The only way was just kind of not giving up and digging in and saying, look, this is the area I want to be in. Kind of define what niche you're in,
mm-hmm.
and then hit that. Don't send your book to people that want that, you know, are writing that don't sell those kind of books. Find out, do some homework, find out what agents are looking for the kind of fiction you write, and I'm not afraid to send it out to them a couple times. But right now, I'm backing off of that. I really believe I'm going to need to build up a record that says, "Hey, this guy didn't buy all these books himself. He doesn't have this many friends. These are real sales from other people looking for the comments that people leave," and then keep writing books and keep doing this. It's not going to be cheap, and it's not going to be quick, but I'm ready. See, I'm ready now. The photography taught me you own your own business, just like the photography business. No one's going to pay you unless you go out and get some clients, and in this particular case, I want agents, I want a publisher, and I want readers that go, hey, I want to read his next book, and so I'm, you know, I'm stressing probably what you probably have heard a lot, and that is, you don't do the work, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Just not.
Well, you got to have patience, and you also have to look at everything long term. You know, it's nice to say, hey, I put out that first book and I made $1 million. Well, that's great. It's unrealistic. It's probably never going to happen. But when you're looking at it the way you're looking at it now and going, okay, I just need to keep working. I just need to keep writing. I need to keep promoting. I need to keep building the brand, you know, that is you. And I think that's probably the best lesson anybody could take out of this.
Another thing that was kind of a crossover with photography was in stock photography. I every day I was alone. I did more Photoshop images than I did shooting with a camera, because I had thousands and thousands of photos to work with, and I liked special effects. And so every day, I'd spend 8 to 10 hours on my computer in Photoshop creating images, and my goal was to make one image a day. And I learned how to sit down and spend 8 to 10 hours creating that one image. Well, now it's morphed to I have to spend a year and a half on an image,
mm-hmm.
which happens to be a book. So, but that work ethic taught me how to stay in place, how to make my life revolve around my writing or my photography. And you set some patterns, and pretty soon your kids figure out when to leave you alone. The rest of the world starts to leave you alone at those hours, and you learn how to still have a life. But it is something that takes every single day, making it priority.
Yeah, and I think that's super important to do. So how long has it taken you to write a book?
First one took me about 3 years, which I had no idea was going to be. But what time I edited about 9 times. Second book took me 2.5. This one took me 1.5 years. So I'm getting better at it. I'm also taking some, I'm learning to, I call it learning from the best. There's a internet program. It's actually not a program. I'm not sure what word to give it, but it's called the Masters. And you can take the course. It costs about $90 per course or $180 for all their courses. And they've got James Patterson or Dan Brown giving 25 hours of how to write. So they're live, excuse me, they're on video, 25 hours of them telling you the inner workings of writing a book. And these are the best, these are the top sellers, and they give you everything they've got. Interesting. I've learned so much. It's also helped with the insecurities of being a writer. I'm like an 8th grade boy about to go to his first dance. And I'm afraid to death to ask, you know, a girl to dance. That's how it feels like when I'm writing a book and someone says, well, let me read what you're, and I read your book and I don't want to give it to them because pretty soon they're going to have to tell me whether they liked it or not.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for those insecurities. There's a million of them in writing a book.
Yeah, that's very true. And unfortunately, that never really completely goes away. Even if you talk to authors who've been doing this for 30 years, it's still there.
Yeah, well, I'm still in 8th grade.
Nice. All right, so where can people find you out there?
Online, Amazon, if you want to see the books, and just type in my last name, if you can spell it, which I'll give you a quick one. It's A-G-L-I-O-L-O. And believe me, you're not going to be able to spell that the first time you go through it. But my guy's here, too. We're all three, Chris. What's that? Okay, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Michael Agliolo.
Well, nice. Very cool. Well, it was awesome talking to you. Good luck with everything, and maybe someday you'll graduate to the 9th grade with writing books.
I won't hold my breath.
Exactly.
It's been great talking to you, too.
Great talking to you, Michael. I appreciate
it. You bet.
And there you have it. Great interviewer, great interviewee. And that's it. That's pretty much all I got to say about that. Hopefully he'll be on again in the future, and we will talk again. So that should be pretty good. I also want to thank our sponsor this week, AdamandEve.com. Check out AdamandEve.com. Get almost any one item 50% off. They pile on all the good free stuff, something for you, something for your significant other, something for Bodia's, Six Sizzling Videos, free shipping, AdamandEve.com, and just use ARMCAST to check out, ARMCAST. And I got some other really good interviews coming up. This week, I will have Jared Barbie from Death's Head Press will show up to be interviewed. And then next week, Kyle Liebeck is interviewed. So a couple of good ones there, and so that's it. For me, you're asking, oh, you want to know what's going on with me? I appreciate you asking. I am a couple of books that will be coming out maybe by the end of the year, probably by the beginning of next year. One of them is The Hidden Truth, which I co-wrote with Jay Wilburn. It'll be our third book we co-wrote together. And we've just gone through the edits and the cover and all the other stuff with Crossroad Press. Very excited about this. I really like the way they handle things. Very professional. And so we were going through all that. So it's a transgressive fiction book. It's a little different than anything either of us have ever written, which I think is good. And that comes out probably beginning of 2020, maybe February, something like that. But we just saw the cover art, and it's fabulous. It's delightful. And we just did the edits back and forth, which is great. And we're doing some promotional stuff. We're going to do some setups for it, which will be really nice. And then the other thing I'm doing is I'm going through the extensive edits for Death Metal, which will be re-released and a lot of it rewritten. And that will be out from Stitch Smile Publications. Not sure when. We're taking our time with it. We are just trying to get the best book possible because I wrote that over 10 years ago and it shows. So, but I'm having a lot of fun with that. A lot of notes in the column on that one, like every page, which they all make sense, which is cool. But it's a cool way of working with the company. The way there's so many edits that I normally don't get. I'm spoiled. I normally write a pretty clean first draft. So this is like probably it was probably edited in like 2008 by the first company that put it out, and they did a really simple edit on it, like a line edit for typos. That was it. So and it's always been one of my favorite stories, but it's kind of rushed. So I'm going to spread it out a little bit and do a couple of different things with it. So those things are coming out at some point as well, and then I got a ton of other stuff, so I will keep you in the loop, as they say, as the young kids say. All right, everybody, I will talk to you next time.
The Unsupervised Podcast. Who likes a good old spanking?
I felt it. You need to move your lips more.
Your weekly distraction from all of the stress.
You gotta shoot your shot.
I guarantee you these are all white children.
What are you sniffing a panda ass for?
I would smell it. They're so cute.
We're kind of like the Seinfeld of podcasts. Not really about anything, but we're going to make you laugh and hopefully entertain you for a little while.
It's called like a chicken McGangbang. It's like a...
Whoa.
I get tranquilized, but I'm still moving.
It's like a freaking circus. I love it.
Thursdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.